From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, tightened polls and the campaign fight to the finish, FBI Director James Comey's October surprise, the battle for Mosul, and the Chicago Cubs on top of the world. Hillary Clinton hammering home the confidence question on Donald Trump in the final week before Election Day. Here she was in Kent, Ohio.
In a crisis, who would you trust? Who will listen to good advice, keep a level head, and make the right call? Because that's the person you want as our president and commander-in-chief.
Donald Trump in Florida telling supporters he will take the White House.
We are going to win back the White House. That will happen. But you have to get out. You have to vote. We have to get out there. We don't want to blow it.
And the Chicago Cubs are World Series champions again after just 108 years. Here was the winning play.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over. And the Cubs have finally won it all. 8-7-10.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Christina Bellantoni of the Los Angeles Times, Jay Newton Small of Time Magazine, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you see in the home stretch now to voting day? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Los Angeles, Christina Bellantoni, assistant managing editor for politics at the Los Angeles Times. Christina, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you here. Joining us from Washington, Jay Newton Small, correspondent for Time Magazine, author of Broad Influence, How Women Are Changing the Way America Works. Jay, welcome back to you.
Hi, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Christina, and Jay.
All right, here we are. After all these months and months and months, it's a matter of just days now. Christina, what do the polls tell us, and can the polls be trusted?
It depends on what state you're looking at, what poll you're looking at, right? This is one of the things that we tend to forget every 4 years. The polls always show a tightening, and oftentimes they reflect, you know, the person ahead in national polling tends to win. That's something that we've seen for many, many, many cycles. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing here is, one, there's so many millions of people that have already voted. In California, we've already got, you know, potentially as much as 20% of the electorate that has already voted. In other states, it's pretty high. There's a lot of absentee voting going on, early voting, that the campaigns are both attempting to game out those numbers and make some assessment of where they stand. But what we do know is that the race has dramatically tightened over the last week. Hillary Clinton had a super large lead going into the final days. And then obviously the email situation that broke late last Friday has given some voters some pause. And we're seeing that anecdotally. We're seeing that reflected in polls all across the country, and particularly in the battleground states. But the fact remains that she still does have a lead. Democrats are feeling slightly less confident. And then that confidence translates to, okay, do we have the ability to win back the Senate? Do we have the ability to win a number of seats in the House?
We'll look at the email controversy, the FBI stepping in there, James Comey, the director, of course, Jay Newton Small, that when you look at the map of the country now, what are the states that appear most crucial in deciding this race one way or the other?
Well, there's the traditional swing states, where you've got Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. But then there's some states in play that are really interesting this cycle. So, for example, North Carolina is very much in play these days. You've also got Utah, which I think is a fascinating state, which is less about – it's a very solid Republican state, but it's less about whether or not Hillary Clinton can win there, and more about whether third-party candidates are going to pull so many votes from Donald Trump to either give Hillary a window to win, or one of those third-party candidates might actually win because Donald Trump is so incredibly unpopular in Utah. You've got states like Iowa and Ohio, which are trending more towards Donald Trump in this race, but then states like Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, which are trending more towards Hillary Clinton. And if Clinton can really clinch those states, as well as New Hampshire and the western states of Colorado and Nevada, then those are states where she could afford to actually to lose a state like Ohio and still win the nomination or still win the election. So it's a different kind of electoral map than we've seen in recent elections, which makes it much more interesting. And there's a lot more paths to the potential presidency, but it also makes it a lot more complicated to game it out.
Jack, how do you read this? Is this as open to polling and projection as a typical race, or does it look less yielding to that kind of pre-vote analysis?
Well, there's some argument that the latter is true. In Nevada, for example, Mr. Ralston, the expert on Nevada politics, says polls showing Trump there ahead, I think, by 7, he just didn't believe them. And the reason, he said, so many Nevadans have already voted, and the Nevadans who voted appear to be more Democratic. And I guess that's one of the questions. Have so many people already voted that current polls don't really match, current realities, that there have already been banked polls that are not, that the vote that has already been cast isn't being measured as current.
Why would it not line up, Jack, the early voting and the general polling?
If it is disproportionately one party or the other, and Ralston was saying in Nevada, what he's seeing is very heavy voting among Hispanics, and that isn't reflected in the 7-point Trump lead, and he just didn't believe it. And I'm just wondering if that model is true elsewhere, sometimes favoring Trump, sometimes Clinton.
Christina, yes, please.
Well, I was going to say, the other thing about polls is we like to look at likely voters. And the way that many polls do a likely voter screen is by looking at who has gone to the polls before. And, that's an indicator. If you've voted before, you're likely to vote again. And in a lot of cases, particularly in California, which is not competitive at the presidential level, but does reflect many, many thousands of citizens who have recently been naturalized, people that have lived in the United States for, in some cases, decades and never bothered to do it so that they could vote. So we have no idea if they're being polled or not. And that's happening in a lot of cases. That's one of the reasons you're seeing Arizona look more like a battleground, and some of these states that are seeing rapid demographic change. Similar situation in Florida, whether that's new immigrants or people that just didn't vote previously. Are they reflected? We just don't know. But at the same time, you are seeing reflected in polls. We have a poll coming out this weekend that looks at California and the presidential race that just reflects that the enthusiasm is very low among Democrats still, even in this state where Hillary Clinton clearly has a sizable lead. It is a place where Democrats are not feeling that jazzed about showing up, whereas the hardcore Trump voters are very excited.
Jay Newton Small, what about the motivation of voting groups here? North Carolina went for President Obama, but it only did that with an enormous turnout of African-American voters. He has been, even today, on the hustings, calling on African-Americans to come out and vote for Hillary Clinton. But what do we see in that sector of the electorate, and what might that mean for Clinton Trump?
Well, polls show, and there's one recently released today, which said that 88% of African Americans said that they planned to vote or had already voted. So African Americans generally are fairly reliable.
Is that national or North Carolina, you're saying?
That was national. Sorry, okay. Not North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That was a national poll of African-American voters. And generally speaking, African-American voters are very reliable in presidential campaigns. And yes, they are a lot less enthused about voting for Hillary Clinton than they are for voting for the first black president. But that doesn't mean that they're going to stay home necessarily, although that is clearly a fear for the president and for Hillary Clinton. The one group that I've been following that I think is really interesting that has seen a lot of movement in this campaign on the Republican side has been non-college-educated white women. And that's a group that traditionally goes by more than 20 points or about 20 points for Republican candidates, historically going back, almost to Eisenhower. But in this election, go back to right after the convention, they were going for Donald Trump by about 30 points. Then after the whole Access Hollywood allegations of groping came out, they were, Hillary was actually tied with him amongst non-college educated white women, 40-40 in one Atlantic PPI poll. Mm-hmm. And then now in the recent week, they've swung back again to Donald Trump. And that's where you see the movement in the polls. And so almost all of the movements in the polls for Donald Trump, whenever he gains and comes close within striking distance, Hillary is almost completely on the back of non-college educated white women swinging either away or for him. And that's why you see him bringing Melania out on the campaign trail, trying to appeal to them, trying to appeal to the softer side of his better nature, telling himself, stay on point, Donald, don't mess this up, And so and that's really his closing argument, is to try to get these women enthused and out voting for him.
Here was Melania Trump in a speech yesterday in Pennsylvania talking about Donald Trump and what she'd pay attention to if she became first lady. She said it would be to combat harassment and bullying of children, spoke specifically of combating online bullying.
Children and teenagers can be fragile. They are hurt when they are made fun of or made to feel less in looks or intelligence. This makes their life hard and can force them to hide and retreat. Our culture has gotten too mean and too rough.
Melania Trump yesterday. Christina Bellantoni, does Melania pull in the vote? And what about that theme? That's a little rich. It's gotten too mean and too rough. Mean and rough was sort of the hallmark of the Trump campaign in the primaries.
Isn't it, though? The role of spouses in this campaign has just been so interesting on every level, right? Former President Bill Clinton out there, what we've seen from Melania, even Michelle Obama being really the most popular surrogate out there on the trail. But this is no accident that you're seeing Melania in the final days. Jay is exactly right. You know, there is an appeal to women, a sort of softening of the Trump campaign. It's one of the reasons Kellyanne Conway was chosen to begin with. It's one of the reasons you see her so frequently out there on television is, you know, a relatable female. And they want to make sure that they can say, we're going to be here for you women. The question of the bullying message, I mean, that does resonate with a lot of people. People vote on, you know, their own personal situations. They vote on their kids. We'll see what happens.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, the last days of this long, long presidential campaign, a real fight to the finish as the polls tighten here. The FBI director stepping into it in the last week, Iraqi troops in Mosul, Cubs win the World Series. Jay Newton-Small is with us, contributor at Time Magazine. Christina Bellantoni, assistant managing editor at the Los Angeles Times, is here. Jack Beatty as well. You can join us. What do you see coming next Tuesday? Was FBI Director Comey right to speak up to get into this? Have we taken the right measure in this long campaign season of Hillary Clinton, of Donald Trump? And what does this campaign, this battle, what's it been essentially about to your eyes? What are you hearing, seeing in your neck of the woods? Are we going to be okay on November 9th? Lots of surrogates out on both sides, especially for Hillary Clinton lately. President Obama out in Chapel Hill, North Carolina on Wednesday saying voters should consider what he says is at stake in this election.
I am not on the ballot, but I tell you what, fairness is on the ballot, decency is on the ballot, justice is on the ballot, progress is on the ballot, our democracy is on the ballot right now.
Democracy on the ballot right now, says the president, and Donald Trump in Pensacola, Florida, same day, Wednesday, saying, talking to himself out loud, saying, don't go off script, Donald, stay, you know, stay on.
We've got to be nice and cool, nice and cool. Right? Stay on point, Donald, stay on point. No sidetracks, Donald. Nice and easy, nice.
And he has been sticking more to the teleprompter. Offit has put him in trouble sometimes. David in Atlanta, Georgia. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am just, I've been repeatedly surprised. I voted for Bernie in the primary, but I do support Hillary Clinton. But I've been repeatedly surprised by this sort of false equivalency that people saying, like, well, I just, you know, it seems like I have to choose the lesser of two evils. But Donald Trump seems dramatically more dangerous, both as a just as a person with all of the bragging about sexual assault and all of the other allegations, including a pending child rape case in December and many other things, you know, thousands of you know, trials that he's faced, lawsuits, excuse me, versus Hillary Clinton, who's being accused of, you know, having a server that was, you know, using a private server. This is vastly different, and I'm constantly surprised that people acting like, oh, how could you possibly pick between the two of them? Somebody pointed out, I saw on Twitter, said, you know, maybe we should just look at who the literal neo-Nazis and KKK are vocally supporting and then consider who we're supporting. And I don't mean to draw, like, say, you know, Trump is Hitler. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that he has been repeatedly used violent rhetoric and hate speech as this, you know, condemning, large swaths of our population. I don't understand how potentially 45% of the population right now via the polls is supporting this man.
David, I appreciate your call. Jack, step in here. Here we are, and there have been from many, many establishment figures in politics and beyond dire warnings about Donald Trump. And, of course, Hillary Clinton, very happy to make those on the trail, saying he's unfit, he doesn't have the right temperament. And many Republicans have said the same thing. But, of course, the Republican Party is riven this time. How do you account, Jack? Is it a discounting of what these prominent figures are saying about Donald Trump? Is it a the hell with it, we don't care, we want something different? Is it an actual embrace of the full palette of what Trump brings, including the anger?
Well, you know, I think the question of the hour really is, are white Americans so unhappy with their relatively declining status in our rapidly browning society that they're ready to elect Trump? You know, according to a recent biography, he's obsessed with status, with whether his buildings are taller, his hands bigger, fame and fortune greater than others. He looks into his heart and finds a lot of America, because polls show again and again that you ask Trump supporters, has the country changed for the better since the 1950s? 72% no. You asked Hillary supporters, 70% say yes, the country has changed for the better. So you know, in a way, Trump isn't a winking demagogue. He's really authentic in expressing his core issue. He's worried about his status. White Americans are, and he has latched on to that passion. He's the first candidate to do that, probably in a generation, the same generation that has seen these inexorable forces, globalization and demography, changing what America is and will be. You know, it's not for nothing that the symbol of his campaign is a wall against the tide of time.
But, I mean, of course, he puts it differently. Hillary Clinton, she sort of broke out of her contained character this week at a campaign in Miami. We saw this. There was a heckler there carrying a sign that said, Bill Clinton is a rapist. I mean, this is presumably a Trump supporter. And here's a moment where she just sort of, to this dark theme, she just unloaded on this guy in that large crowd.
I am sick and tired of the negative, dark, divisive, dangerous vision and behavior of people who support Donald Trump. It is time for us to say no. We are not going backwards. We're going forward into a brighter future.
Hillary Clinton sort of breaking through right there, at least breaking out of form. But Donald Trump, this was last night in Jacksonville, he went after her not on that front, but on the record, foreign policy.
In 2009, pre-Hillary, Libya was stable, Syria was under control, Iraq was seeing a reduction in violence, and ISIS wasn't even on the map. We didn't know what ISIS was.
J. Newton Small, respond to our Atlanta caller who says, I just don't get it. At this point, he's a Hillary supporter. He looks at Donald Trump, he sees a dangerous man. Demagogue would be the least of it. I mean, he raises the Hitler word there. And, of course, on the other side, you've got the 40%+, 45, 47, right up next to Hillary's numbers in some of these polls of Americans who are supporting Trump. How do you make for this gap in understanding, perception, embrace?
I would say it's our fault, frankly. It's the media's fault. So there's far too many people who just only read one side of things, and they go down these kind of spirals of echo chambers, I would say, of they only see the one side, and then Trump is akin to Hitler and Hillary is a she-devil. And they don't try to understand the other side. They won't see the other side. And I think that's a big problem in America. It's one that's been increasingly a problem in that our electorate is so divided and they don't make any effort to see and understand what's driving the other voters in order to pick these people. And so many people say, I don't know a single person who's voting for Donald Trump, or I don't know a single person who's voting for Hillary Clinton, and they don't understand what's driving it. And so I think there was a great Wall Street Journal sort of op-ed a few months ago which said that Facebook should have an opposite opposite button. And I kind of agree with that. Like, you should be able to sort of flip the other side, flip the algorithms that are delivering news that you like all the time to see all the news that you wouldn't like. And that I wish that people would read more news that they don't like, because then they would hopefully begin to understand what is driving the other side and begin to maybe understand, begin to compromise, begin to sort of have these like conversations that I think need to be had in America.
Is it that, Christina? Or, I mean, has the reporting been done? Is everything on the table? It is remarkable to me that here we are on the Friday before the election, and Donald Trump's tax returns are still not public. No other candidate in modern history has done this. It seems like a kind of, to my mind, a kind of deep insult to the electorate, that that kind of transparency would not be there when his business success is a major part of his claim to prominence. And yet, it's not done. It's not seen. The Times is out there reporting today that there's all these indications that what he's suggesting as his income is actually vastly exaggerated because it's gross, not net. When you net out debt and all the rest, it's very much smaller. But we don't know. And here it is. It's Friday. The election is Tuesday.
Yeah, it's incredibly surprising. And you have seen that reflected in polls, actually. In some cases, more voters are turned off by that and made their decision against Trump for that reason than the revelation that he had made these comments on video with the Access Hollywood tapes. So that is something that definitely has offended people. I would like to go back to that last caller, though, because you've all weighed in. And I think that we can't forget this is a nation that is exactly, as Jay put it, very deeply polarized at this point. This is a very different sentiment than people felt, you know, between Mitt Romney and President Obama, or John McCain and Barack Obama, both then senators. And we're seeing the most unpopular candidates really in modern history on both sides. And for everyone that believes, as our caller does, those things about Donald Trump, there are people that believe Hillary Clinton has done, you know, nefarious things. There are accusations of murder. I mean, just really unbelievably ridiculous things that have been proven false, but the country is in that place. And it's because they're seeing media that sort of validates their own point of view, but it's also because these candidates have been out there in the public sphere for so long. People have deeply hardened opinions about them. And of course, the course of the campaign has not improved them at all. That's a difficult place for our country to be in. And whoever is the next president really needs to seriously consider, how do you bring together people for healing? How do you actually get something done? It's not just about a gridlocked Congress. It's about this country is in a bad place.
Let's go to Dan calling from New York, Peekskill, New York. Dan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment about a worrying trend I see in myself and in the public discourse, which is a tendency to immediately demonize full-throatedly people who support the opposing candidate that you support. And I find that really worrying, and I don't see many politicians speaking about reconciliation after the vote is done. And I also don't see future candidates coming up where I can say, hey, look at that person. They seem to be speaking about a unified America despite our differences. And I just wanted to point out that that really worries me. And I think, I don't know that there's causation, but at least a correlation between that trend that I'm seeing both in myself and others, and the campaigning style of both of the candidates immediately jumping to questions of who is fit or unfit for the presidency, rather than a deep, detailed discussion of policy differences.
Well, Jack, should Hillary Clinton be talking about a deep, detailed discussion of policy differences with Mr. Trump?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the sort of the lost opportunities of this campaign for Mrs. Clinton. Donald Trump is a faux populist. What he could get through Congress, his tax program, he could pass it tomorrow, would advantage the top earners by an average of $150,000 a year. That'd be their tax cut. Mrs. Clinton's program would raise their taxes by almost as much. Donald Trump would abolish the estate tax, make the country safe for aristocrats, for his son, Barron. Mrs. Clinton actually wants to raise it some. That's the basis of an economic populism. And I have yet to see an ad from the Clinton camp that goes right at those white working class voters and says, look, Trump says he's all for you, but look at the tax plan. And, you know, according to CNN, Trump would actually raise taxes for the middle class and below. But she hasn't done that. It's all been identity politics. It's all been the horrible things Trump has said. And they are horrible. Deplorable, deeply deplorable, what he said about women, about handicap. You can go on and on. But it's a missed opportunity to use the unifying appeal of economics to say to people, you know, this guy is not the real McCoy as a populist.
Jane Newton Small, we had the FBI director getting into this at the end of last week, and of course that is echoed all through this week, and people point to that as part of what may have slowed Hillary Clinton's momentum here. What about James Comey stepping in at this time with this broad, the short letter to Congress with a broad reference of emails that might be related to the earlier examination of Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State, when, of course, he said there was nothing to prosecute there? There has been fierce debate over whether that was appropriate or not. Is there a consensus emerging at the end of this week? And how important do you think that shot across the bow from the FBI director has been, Jay?
I think there is a consensus emerging in Washington that it was irresponsible of him to do this, especially considering now it's come out that they had held off announcing or moving forward with investigations relating to Trump's ties to Russia or Trump campaign staffers' ties to Russia, where there seemed to be some evidence there because they didn't want to politicize it. The idea that over the summer, even, they had said, we don't want to announce anything because this is going to interfere with the campaign, and it's the tradition of the administration to not interfere with the campaign. And so the idea that suddenly he would announce this and with no sense of what's in the emails, right? So he's just announcing that they are reopening and looking at a bunch of emails. If it had been the sense of saying, okay, that there's actual evidence here, then that's bad. I mean, it just opens up such a huge can of worms, and it's made it into this massive mess where everybody in the FBI is leaking with some political agenda. All these different things now. It's been a rush of these leaks in the last week, which net have been damaging to Hillary Clinton. And so, sure, I mean, if she loses the race, I think you're going to see a lot of criticism of Comey and blame heaping down on that. If she wins the race, and then she'll have a bigger mandate. So in a way, she'll owe Comey that favor, saying, I won despite the fact that this came out. And then obviously a lot will depend on what's found in those emails. And it's not likely they're going to be able to figure that out in the next 4 days or even 3 days, right, and certainly huge amounts of America have already voted, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's so much can happen depending on what come out in those emails or not come out in these emails. If it turns out to be a nothing burger, then Comey's in even worse water. If it turns out to be something serious, then it's like at least he did warn us. But, I mean, there's all these different – it's such a huge can of worms that he's opened up, and I don't think he did himself any favors by doing it.
Hillary Clinton there under the gun. Donald Trump's campaign manager Kelly Conway jumping right on it on CNBC on Monday. Here she was.
She's going to be in her second FBI investigation. Most friends you know under one FBI investigation, let alone two. Do we think this is normal? I think people have been asking the right questions about the wrong candidate. Who really is unqualified? Who's unfit to be president? Who has shown what they would do with our national security information?
Bill Clinton jumping in on the same issue the next day in Florida, downplaying the FBI's renewed attention here.
Don't you think it's interesting that Hillary's opponent spends all this time talking about this, and yet most of the people who've been heavily involved in protecting the security of this country for the last 20 years in both parties have endorsed her?
Christina Bellantoni, what do you think is driving the polls at this point? Is it James Comey? Is it something else?
It's a combination of things. I think in some ways the Comey affair, you know, Jay pointed out, is actually motivating Democrats because they're scared. Okay, they thought she had this locked up. This will make sure that they come out to vote, that this could really throw her off her game in the final days. They said they would speed this investigation up. Clearly that hasn't happened in the final days of this race. You know, you're not going to get some big bombshell on Monday, or if you do, that's going to cause even more condemnation.
Let's not talk about bombshells on Monday. We've got CBS News reporting possible Al-Qaeda attacks on Monday from U.S. intelligence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Wonder Capital, asking what if you could help combat global climate change and make money at the same time? Introducing Wonder Capital, the award-winning investment platform that allows individuals to invest in solar energy projects across the U.S. Wonder's online investment platform allows you to earn up to 8.5% annually while diversifying your portfolio, curbing pollution, and combating climate change. And best of all, Wonder Capital doesn't take any fees for investing your money. Create an account for free at wondercapital.com/onpoint. Wonder Capital. Do well and do good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, protesters and law enforcement still in a standoff over the Dakota Access Pipeline here at Cantapita Creek in North Dakota, where the pepper spray rained down. Another pipeline, a major gasoline pipeline, exploded in Shelton County, Alabama on Monday. At least one person died. Two witnesses captured the moment it went up on cell phone video.
That don't look good, buddy.
No.
I think it's the freaking gas line. I don't know, but look how black that smoke is.
Big smoke and explosion there. A lot of the Southeast looking at the gasoline shortages during the remainder of the week. They're back on it. We're told by this weekend should be back and running. And at the Country Music Awards, Beyonce got the buzz. She teamed up with the Dixie Chicks for a big band presentation of her country song, Daddy Lessons. We're looking at a week in the news, last days of the campaign, a fight to the finish, Iraqi troops in Mosul. The Cubs win the World Series after 108 years. J. Newton Small is with us from Time Magazine, Christina Bellantoni from the Los Angeles Times. Jack Beatty is here. You can join us. Did you expect the election to be this close in the polls, this close to Election Day? What do you say to GOP senators who say they would never confirm a Hillary Clinton Supreme Court nominee? Are you following the fighting in Mosul, the pipeline protests in North Dakota, the killing of those two Des Moines policemen in Iowa? What about the Cubs, those Indians, the series? Campaign talk all over. Bernie Sanders here, campaigning for Hillary Clinton in Raleigh, North Carolina. Last night said she's the one for the job.
What this campaign must be about is which candidate has the experience and the vision to work for the middle class and the working class and the families of our country. And in my view, without a shadow of doubt, that candidate is Hillary Clinton, our next president.
Bernie Sanders. They fought. Now he's fighting for her in Greenville, Mississippi on Tuesday night. Ugly thing, 111-year-old black church set on fire, spray painted with the words "Vote Trump" on the side. The FBI has opened a civil rights investigation. Here's Pastor Carolyn Hudson of the Hopewell Baptist Church speaking about the church's response to the attack.
Our church was a historic church. It had been there for over 111 years, and our hearts are broken. But we are not angry, but hearts are broken, and we are saddened by what has happened.
Not a good thing there in Greenville, Mississippi. Julia in Concord, Massachusetts. Thank you for calling, Julia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling now just to talk a little bit about what I find most distressing, which is the contempt for the rule of law that I think Trump is both the embodiment of and the accelerator of. I don't think he's the point of origin, but I do think that when you see something like the acceleration from Mitch McConnell's, I think, unconstitutional shirking of his duty to take on the Supreme Court or to put through the process, to now Republican senators saying that they're not going to, if Hillary Clinton's elected, they're simply not going to replace court justices. So that's my concern, you know, that there's just a kind of acceleration and spreading of a kind of contempt for the law and the Constitution.
Julia, though, right now on the other side of the political ledger, perhaps from you, you've got a lot of Trump supporters saying, look at Hillary Clinton, how she handled these emails. I mean, they point right there when you talk about contempt for law.
Well, this is what I would say, okay? I would say that actually Hillary Clinton has gone through legal processes, and that Donald Trump, with his talk of jailing his opponent, seems not to know that we have a legal system and that we have things like indictments and trials before we jail people. I think I'm not suggesting that Hillary Clinton is a perfect person, but I don't, or that there aren't Oh, I'm not troubled by the emails. Actually, I think it was stupid, but I don't think it was in any way illegal.
There's a divide right there. Julia, I think we've got the main gist of it. I mean, Christina, sometimes you look out these days and it looks like a kind of meltdown out there. I mean, people talking about investigations of Clinton if she should win immediately, talking about never putting Supreme Court justices on. People, on the other hand, you know, suggesting, you know, Donald Trump is out of line to make many of the criticisms that he's making here. We saw this morning this ripple in Washington of talk that Paul Ryan might be out as Speaker of the House. He's saying he's going to hang in there and run for that again. But there's a sense I hear with everybody I talk to on both sides of the political aisle here, if there is an aisle anymore, that things are just coming undone.
It's an interesting way to look at it. You know, I mean, I left Washington after living there 12 years. So as an outsider, now mm-hmm. I see it. It mm-hmm. seems like it's kind of the same. These are some of the same arguments we've been having, just a little more fervent. I would say there is a huge question if Hillary Clinton is the next president, how Congress will behave with her. There is the fact matter of what they're saying publicly. Oh, yes, we'll have lots of investigations. We will crank up our oversight committees. We will make sure that we are probing this White House. I mean, you've heard people even float terms of, you know, pursuing impeachment immediately. But there's also a reality in that many of them have worked with her. Republicans in Congress, both chambers, have worked with her for many years, have known the Clinton family, worked with Bill Clinton. And that isn't nothing. It's something that Barack Obama did not do well when he first came to Washington as president. He wasn't able to translate his short time in the Senate to really get those relationships in Congress going, and she has them, and I think that could bode well for some sort of progress. But at the same time, you have the reality that no matter what happens with control of Congress, you're going to have a more closely divided both chambers, and both people will be clawing to get that back in 2018. Then at the same time with Paul Ryan, if you see a good number of Republicans lose on Tuesday night, those are the Republicans that vote for Paul Ryan for Speaker. They're the moderates. They're, you know, if it's California Republicans, there's, you know, three potential ones that are definite Ryan voters. The Tea Party guys and the sort of conservative agitators might lose in some cases, but it's more likely to be the ones that are in districts that voted for Barack Obama in 2012. So, again, that puts the difficult onus on what kind of governing do you want to have? Do you want to be a check and balance on the administration? Do you want to try to get something done? Because the only thing less popular than Congress right now is journalists and stockbrokers.
John in Cleveland, Ohio. John, you're on the air.
Yes, I consider myself a liberal, and I read left-wing sites like Global Research, globalresearch.ca, but I've never voted for a Republican candidate or president. But this time, reluctantly, I'm going to force myself to vote for Donald Trump, because on the most important issue, survival issue of all, avoiding World War and World War III, he is the only one who has refused to kneel before this new old religion of anti-Russia version of red baiting. We're right back to the 1954 McCarthy red baiting with all of the media, and I mean all of it. In a totalitarian, monolithic propaganda campaign based on lies, totally lack of evidence of Russia's evil doing, Assad's so-called evil doing, Gaddafi's evil doing.
John, have you looked at what's happened in Syria? Have you followed at all the last 5 or 6 years? What's happened to the Syrian people?
Yes,
the torture and all the rest.
Yes, I have, and I want to.
Well, then, what do you mean?
I want to point something out.
Yeah,
Operation Mockingbird is the proof from Senate and congressional committees that all of the media in our country is dominated by central intelligence agency propaganda.
Okay, John, you know, right there. I mean, that is just flatly absurd, man. I have nothing to do with any organization like that, and I'm in the media, so just I don't know where you're coming from, but that is utterly ridiculous. Okay. At the same time, Jack, you can look out and make an assessment of how people do summarize what's going on in this heavy hip checking on the nuclear front and sort of renewed Cold War, something like echo tensions, if you want to. Do you think Russia's getting a fair analysis here?
Mr. Trump has said, I've always felt fine about Putin. I think he's a strong leader. He's a powerful leader. Max Boot, the neoconservative analyst, says Trump's election is the gravest threat to American national security. Why? Because he would destroy, or at least disturb, the alliances that have been the foundation of world order and our substantial peace with Russia for generations. And his attitude toward them is careless, insouciant in the extreme. The Baltics? Oh, well, the Russians want Crimea? Well, who cares? You know, this is scary stuff. And that John's picture of Putin just doesn't respond to what we read ever. Doesn't respond to what we heard this morning on the BBC, this picture of these people and these children dying in Aleppo. It's horrifying. Now, on the other side, you know, the President Obama said this week something very profound. He said the presidency doesn't change you, it magnifies you. And I can imagine Trump supporters saying, well, that means Hillary Clinton's, quote, interventionist tendencies would be magnified in the presidency. On the other hand, Mr. Obama meant that against Trump, meaning that his xenophobia, his racism, his bullying, all that would be magnified.
Yeah, and here we are. And here we are. We had this killing in Des Moines this week of two police officers there, gunned down as they sat in their cars. News conference on Wednesday, Sergeant Paul Parizic of the Des Moines Police Department talked about exactly what happened. Short and terrible.
These guys were gunned down, sitting in their car, doing nothing wrong.
Christina, have you followed the aftermath of this and the arrests there? We've got Scott Michael Green, bond set for him, $10 million, charged with first-degree murder here. Apparently a disturbed guy who had been around town with the Confederate flag, and now we've got two dead police officers killed by a white, mentally disturbed man. Is that fair to say here, Christina?
Yeah, I think so. And the police officers were white themselves.
Yep.
And, you know, police are in a really unfortunate situation right now in this country. You know, nobody wants to see this. This is awful. The sort of violence that has been plaguing this country on this issue for a while has been very frightening, right? You don't want to see anyone become a target of gun violence, period. And you're seeing both political campaigns use this in some ways. I mean, it's not the right way to say to their advantage, but they're talking about it in terms of, okay, you know, making sure people with mental problems don't have access to guns. You've got that on the ballot. People are using what happened in Iowa to talk about that this is somebody that has clearly been disturbed. What could have been done to prevent him from getting a weapon? Then at the same time, you have people talking about the Blue Lives Matter movement. And these things don't necessarily need to be in conflict with one another. You can have strong feelings of both and want to make sure that our law enforcement officers are protected on the streets and also think that there should be some change in gun laws. So that's a conflicting area that voters are presented with, you know, right in the moment. But, you know, this is a terrible situation where it seems as if there were a lot of different warning signs. They had been watching him for quite a while. I mean, law enforcement has been pretty open about that, you know, because he had been in so many different conflicts. I mean, he was scheduled to appear in court because he had had some conflict with his mother, you know, a couple days after this incident happened. And again, it's just, what can you do?
On the other side of the world, practically, you've got Iraqi forces into Mosul this week for the first time in 2 years, government forces. Here's CNN reporter Arwa Damin speaking to civilians who had fled Mosul to a nearby village just a few miles away. They risked ISIS booby traps and gunfire to get their families out.
He's saying they would put the bombs, the roadside bombs, in front of the homes. And there's snipers on top of the rooftops.
Jack, the early reporting here has all been about fairly rapid progress toward Mosul and now a bit into Mosul as well. But I'm seeing reports today of crazy fierce, I think was the phrase I heard, fighting by ISIS, fighting back by ISIS. Is there any sign yet of where this goes and whether this is going to be a sweep or a siege?
It looks like a siege, but we can't say. We don't know. There was an interesting Iraqi propaganda film that came out. I just saw it last night. Little snippets. It shows a brave group of Iraqi special forces liberating an area of Mosul. And what do? They go to a church, a Christian church that's locked. And they cut the lock so that they can open up this Christian church. Naturally, ISIS has stopped it. And people flock in, and the church is ruined, but they're on their knees. They're praying. There's a priest blessing them. And the picture is, here is the new Iraq, where Christians are protected, minorities are protected, and we're liberating people. Of course, experts say, oh, my, bad as this siege is, what happens afterwards when, Kurds, Sunnis, and Shia all start to divide again, as they almost abound to do over the spoils of Mosul.
One more call here. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man? Listen, with all this doom and gloom, I'm on cloud 9. Actually, I'm on a cloud 108, because that's how long it took for my Cubs to finally win a World Series. The city, my home city, needed something like this with all the doom and gloom that's been hanging over my city for this time. And I just have to believe, if the Chicago Cubs can win the World Series, then the American public can get out and vote against a bigoted, xenophobic racist like Donald Trump.
Carl, you're gonna tie the Cubs right into that. I mean, here in Boston, we know about waiting a long time for a World Series win, and a huge hat tip to Chicago. Very happy for them. Cleveland Indians, though, that was a strong fight. It was a hard fight. We'll work with that, Carl. We'll work with that. Let me get a little bit of Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood here at the Country Music Awards on Tuesday night. A little ditty about this long election season.
This election is taking forever.
The election is taking forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever.
Okay, we get it.
Make it end.
I think we'll let that be the benediction today. Thanks to all of you for being with us. Jay Newton Small with Time Magazine. Thanks for joining us today, Jay.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on.
Christina Bellantoni at the Los Angeles Times. Thank you so much for being here, Christina.
Good luck to all of us in the next few days.
Yes, yes. And Jack Beatty, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Good luck to us all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.